why don't we get started? Maybe she'll come in. So let's call the meeting to order, and we'll begin with the pledge. I think the flag is directly behind me.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I love the pledge.
Me too. All right, let's do a roll call if we can. Mr. All, you want to start that off?
Brian All, Chair, Ethics Commission.
Charlie Cofer, Public Defender.
Sam Musa, Chief Administrative Officer for Mayor Lenny Curry.
Judge Elizabeth Centerfit, I am here for the Chief Judge, Mark Mahan.
Anna Lopez Brochet, City Council.
Lee Hutton with the State Attorney's Office.
All right, and the approval of the November 15th, 2017 minutes. Did everyone get those and have a chance to review? Are there any discussions, any changes, issues from anyone?
Move approval.
Second.
All right, with that, all in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
None opposed? Okay. Those are approved, the November 15th, 2017. So we will go to selection of, no, ordinance changes. I'm sorry. I guess we need to talk about that first. And I believe that's agenda item B, IB. We have proposed changes.
We included in the package a copy of the proposed changes and track changes. These have not been viewed by anybody. They are preliminary at this point. They were reviewed by OGC. They are okay with them legally, but they've not been reviewed by either the City Council or the administration yet. What we tried to do was take into account the recommendations from the committee at the last meeting on the chairperson. So there were some concerns because the way it was currently written is the chairperson essentially went away when the Inspector General was hired. So we tried to go through and fix those, and we tried to put a different construct in place for the selection of the chairperson. We also took the opportunity, since we were reviewing them, to go through and make some minor technical changes in various areas, and I'll go through those before we get to 305, where the majority of the changes were made. So in 303, as I went through and looked at it, some of the paragraphs had periods and some of them had semicolons, so we just added semicolons after all of them to make them consistent throughout. In 303E, it originally said contacts. It should have been contracts, so we added a letter there to fix that. You can see in H, we capitalized Inspector General to make it consistent throughout. In N, we added a verbal briefing to the Inspector General Selection and Retention Commission, or committee, every 6 months in addition to the City Council. Again, one of the requests from the committee at the last meeting was to try to codify a little bit more the committee's role post-selection of the Inspector General. In P, you'll see we took out the word corruption only because it's kind of inconsistent with the rest of the Inspector General ordinances. They all talk about waste, fraud, and abuse. So we changed it from corruption to waste, fraud, and abuse just to make it more consistent. In R, we took out the requirement to post our policies, and that's an internal decision only because a lot of times we may not want individuals to see them. We obviously will release them as part of a public records request if asked, but some of our investigative policies and procedures we would prefer not to post if we didn't have to. So we will establish them. They just won't be posted on our website, but available via public records request. Please feel free if there's any questions.
Yes, sir.
What can possibly be in those that would not be readily, available on the website?
Nothing in particular other than some of the manner and method in which we might conduct an investigation or the manner and method in which we might conduct an audit. Audits probably aren't as much of a concern just because we do them in accordance with generally accepted auditing practices, but for the investigations, there may be a manner or method in which we investigate that we wouldn't necessarily. We do have posted a what to expect when contacted by the Inspector General on our website, which kind of goes through for individuals, but these are more of our in-depth policies and procedures on taking statements, subpoenas, things of that nature.
Thank you.
And then, again, a couple other minor changes there in W and X, but nothing major. And then in 304, we added language to say that the certification is as an inspector general. So there's some language in 304 earlier where it talks about other professional certifications, such as a fraud examiner or a public accountant. So we clarify there that it is certification as an inspector general, just to avoid any confusion over any of those other professional certifications. And then 305 is really where we made the meat of the changes. And you can see what we did there based on the committee's recommendation last time is that the chairperson of the committee would rotate among the members. It would be a two-year term, and it would rotate in numerical order. We added language based from some comments from OGC that it's tied to the position and not the individual, since we realize some of the positions are year-long positions and an individual may rotate out during their term. And then added language that if a member does not wish to serve, it would go to the next member in numerical order. And then upon enactment of this provision, it would start with the city council president as number one in the numerical order of 1 through 7. In subparagraph B, we removed the contract language. That's purely the committee's decision. I went back and listened to the minutes of some of the previous meetings, and I understand there was some discussion about whether or not a contract was necessary for the position, and I know for Mr. Klein there was not a contract based on some recommendations from OGC at the time. For me, there is. So I took it out, but it's purely the committee's decision whether or not they want it in there. It would still be a fixed four-year term. With the same removal provisions, there would just be no employment contract.
Has OGC, if I may, Madam Chair, has OGC opined on that?
I don't know. So all they opined on was that they didn't have any legal objection to the changes. When I mentioned the OGC comments on the contract, I just remember from the very first, I listened to the last committee meeting at which I was hired, the minutes, and towards the tail end, there was a contract discussion there. And I believe it was Ms. Stewart who mentioned that Mr. Klein did not have a contract based on OGC questions or concerns about the contract. So again, I can go either way on it. It really doesn't matter to me whether it's in there or not in there. I did do research. It does appear that the other three municipal inspector generals in Florida do have contracts. So Miami-Dade, Broward County, and Palm Beach all have employment contracts.
Madam Chair, I don't care one way or the other. I'd like OGC to be firm on that.
Yes, sir.
Well, and my question is, people in a similar position to yours within the city of Jacksonville, do they have contracts? Does anyone
else? The ethics officer has a contract.
Yes, ma'am. And that was part of the discussion at the last meeting was about that. I believe that we are the only two who have employment contracts in the city.
I believe that is correct, Madam Chairlady. I would like consistency, I guess.
It would seem to me like we ought to try to be consistent. But I don't, unless there is something legally...
I don't believe there is. I will circle back with OGC and find out what those comments were related to when it came up with Mr. Klein and then see if they have a position. My guess is they won't have a position either way. They'll be fine with it or without it. But I will circle back with them before we push these forward.
All right.
In D, we added the word may only be removed. Again, it may or may not be necessary. I added it. And then subparagraph F is a new paragraph that talks about the committee's role post-selection and added the language in there regarding reviewing the budget. And then in 307, I increased the budget floor based on what our budget has been over the last 3 years. It was originally put in there as $400,000. I upped that to $850,000. That's still below what our budget has been for the last 2 years, but I thought the $400,000 at this point probably wasn't workable given the size of the office. In 308, we added the word "to" just to fix a grammatical mistake there. And then in 309, it originally said a $500 fine for consistency's sake. That was changed from a $500 fine to a Class D offense to make it consistent with other provisions in the ordinance code. And then we just broke up it, knowingly and attempt were in the same subparagraph. We broke it up into knowingly and then knowingly attempt in the second subparagraph.
Any discussion on those?
One question on the term of the chairperson of the committee. It's not really a term specified, whether it's city fiscal year or council president year. Probably ought to have specified from when to when.
All right. I would assume that should be the same as with the council, the year for the city and the council.
Okay.
Which starts when?
The council year starts July 1st.
July 1st. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can add
The fiscal year is October 1st. So.
Right. Fiscal year might not be a bad time because there's a lot for new council coming in to deal with. But they have to approve, but that's a pretty minor thing. But it doesn't matter.
I don't know. Yeah, that it matters. I mean, since we are talking about just a rotation, in essence, every 2 years, if we do it in July or if we do it in October. We do have a meeting generally in November, so I don't know if it would be better for the chairperson to start a little earlier, more at the fiscal year in July, but I don't know that it matters.
Typical term is for agencies like this, committees and boards.
I would suggest that July. Okay. Anything else?
Through the chair, no, sir, only because the contract for employment just references to 602.305. So it doesn't have a specific removal provision in the contract. The contract just says can be removed in accordance with 602.305 of the ordinance code.
So what was the authoritative basis for limiting removal to only those specific reference charges?
Through the chair, only because my read of this provision is those are the only basis by which the inspector general can be removed, absent voluntary termination. Those are the only ways in which he or she can be removed from the position.
And that's not reflected in the contract of employment, but rather that's your interpretation of the statute, right?
That's correct, because, again, the contract for employment simply just says there's a termination paragraph, and it just says in accordance with Section 602.305 of the ordinance code.
It's worth pointing out that the addition of that language substantially changes the provision, but I don't know that I have a disagreement with it. I just was wondering.
Well, the only thing we're changing, though, is the word "only."
That's right.
We're adding it, which limits.
Which I'm not opposed to. It struck me as a significant change.
And through the chair, I believe, again, I was not here when the officer stood up, but I believe the intention of that provision was that those were the only basis for removal. But again, that's my limited knowledge interpretation of reviewing the minutes of the council meetings that were held prior to the enactment of the original ordinance.
This is the current law.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
This is the current law.
Yes, sir. The only changes through the chair are my red lines. But I'm happy to take that out. That was my addition. I'm happy to remove it.
After all, being an attorney, the word, one word changes a lot.
That's true. I don't know that it's inconsistent with the intent of the draftees, but.
discussion or thoughts, strong feelings one way or the other? He's adding this in. I think if we're more comfortable with it out, you know, but we can have him.
An argument could be made that it adds to the independence of the Inspector General, since it limits the grounds for removal.
But it also might not cover some of the conduct that someone should be removed for. I don't think it should be in there.
Is there consensus that we ought to take that back out? I've got three that sound like good on it.
I'm on the fence as well. I mean, I can see both sides. And should it be removed, I think that reaching beyond what these words say is going to require a significant amount of discussion and making the case anyway. So,
I agree.
What is ethical misconduct? Does that cover? What if the individual was arrested for something that may not actually have something to do with their ethics, but may trouble everyone?
I agree. I think we ought to take it out.
Okay.
And give the committee for the protection of the citizens. It gives us more power, and I say us meaning the citizens, versus a single person, Inspector General, as a person. So, all right,
ma'am.
So I think there's consensus. Let's take out only in 602.305D. Any other?
I had one question on 602.307. I just don't know when the, is that unusual that you set a minimum funding base for
a budget?
I just don't know.
So through the chair, this provision existed in the original draft of it. The only thing I changed was the dollar amount. When the offices originally stood up, it had a budget of about $240,000. I want to say the year after that, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $650,000. Now, for the last 3 years, and with our request for this year, it'll be fairly consistent at right around $1 million. So I want to say it was a little under $900,000 the year before I got here. It was $999,000 last year, and then this year it's about $1,207,000. Is the request. I want to make clear the budget are purely requests at this point. We've not submitted anything to the mayor's office or gone through MBRC. These are purely our request.
All right. Mr. Moose?
Thank you. To the committee. I wasn't around either when this got set up, but I think the intent the council desired to ensure that they had minimum funding to do their job. This can be changed by 10 votes any day, and your budget is approved by, preliminarily reviewed by the mayor's office, but ultimately approved by city council. I'm not sure we should have a minimum funding. It is what it is. It is what the council approves.
There's a red line in the 400,000. It's not in black ink. Was it originally 400,000? Should that be in black or?
Yes, ma'am. I don't know why. Maybe I deleted it and then added it back in. But in the ordinance code as currently written, it is $400,000 is the floor. And that's what was passed in 2014 when the office was stood up.
Are there other minimum fundings in statutes like this and ordinances?
I don't know. I was sort of looking to the experts over here who I thought might be able to tell us.
I don't recall.
I don't recall any.
Yeah, through the chair, I don't recall either.
Yeah.
And so there are two questions here. There's the, is the sentence usual? And we don't know. the next question is, I mean, I would not want to change the intent of the council who created this to begin with. And so the question then becomes, do we change it from 400? But I would not be comfortable striking the sentence.
If I may, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
I don't recall any other division or department that has this provision that their minimal budget. But I do recall the discussion in setting up the office. It was an important office. We wanted to make sure the office had the resources, and they wanted the minimum amount of money in there. But if you keep growing or changing, this number's going to keep changing.
Yes, sir.
We obviously could come up with, because in essence, this is, I guess, going to be the committee's recommendation to the council. Do we want to suggest as a group, as a committee that's set up to support the IG, at this stage, do we want to suggest that number should be larger than 400,000?
Budget office, then go to the city. This looks kind of like a startup provision, where in the ordinance they were establishing these are the startup funds, but to include it in the ordinance outside of the mayor's budget and city council approved budget, I think on a year-to-year basis is probably not necessary, probably not binding.
Well, that sentence is going to be there. There is going to be a minimum funding base is hereby established at something annually. I mean, it already says apparently 400,000. So are you saying you think we should just leave it at that? What with the original intent?
Or eliminate the whole sentence and just require that the mayor establish the annual budget as a separate entity like other entities have. We're past the startup era. They've got a budget, and I assume it's going to be kind of a continuing budget if they're filing
Well, through the chair to the committee, I believe that we are approving the budget just like we're doing today, which will then be presented to MBRC and then be incorporated into the budget and then come to council. And so I think this group is the first step and making sure that we're complying with what was originally put here. I'm not in favor of changing it every year as a body, at this body. I would prefer to leave it as it was created, which is what the council did in response to the voters. I mean, the voters didn't say 400,000, but the council thought it important enough to incorporate and leave that in here. So I would prefer that we just leave it as it was created.
For what it's worth, I would support that that notion.
That makes three of us.
All right, I agree. So let's leave it at the 400,000 annually, the way it was originally written. Anything else?
Yes, ma'am, if I may.
Yes, sir.
I should know this, but maybe where the performance criteria established as shown in 305 subarticle F. Are there performance criteria that have been established for the performance of the Inspector General?
Yes, sir. There are performance standards that predate my arrival that were done. I want to say in May of 2016, the committee voted and established performance standards for the Inspector General. Yes, sir.
When will you conduct the performance?
I don't know, sir. So it's supposed to be done on a yearly basis, which will be coming up here shortly.
Okay. I would say, Mr. Musa, the problem has been we had an inspector general for such a short time.
We haven't.
That we probably
never had enough time to do a performance, an annual performance.
I believe that's been the problem.
Very possible.
So that's probably something that, as new business, maybe we should talk about today towards the end of the meeting, is how we want to do that, because we finally have one. that we hope is going to stay. So.
And I apologize. I did not bring those with me, but I do have a copy of them, of the ones that were adopted by the committee back in 2016.
All right. What else? Is everyone comfortable with the chairperson committee language that's added there? Everyone's comfortable with that?
We agree July 1st is the date. Everybody?
Is there a consensus? I suggested that.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a consensus on that.
If I may, just to clarify, the way I currently have it written is that once this ordinance, the modifications are enacted, the city council president would become the chairperson. Do you want me to leave it that way and then say it'll rotate every July thereafter? Because I just don't know when the changes will get enacted. It may not be by this July. I mean, hopefully it may not be. So if we miss July, it would then be the city council president until the following or 2 years later, because it's written for a 2-year term. I just want to make sure.
That makes sense.
Let me say, I mean, we need to, what we, the language we put in is one thing. I have done this for 2 years, so I was, you know, I was going to ask that we do something today and select another chairperson.
Say if we've got a shot at this getting approved before the end of June, for you to stay on until the new year.
I would furthermore implore.
I just want to make sure mine isn't far enough off.
And I love being last. So that's
and it's not going to be me.
No,
I think we're going to leave that just once it's...
I think we'll get
it's
this bill through. I think the council president's support, and I think we'll get this bill through.
Okay. Then I will add that language. And then...
Get it filed. We can't help you if you never file it.
Now, that does still leave the issue of paragraph C in 602.305, the status versus contract. And I don't know if we can resolve that today. There was talk about getting with the OGC first.
So, through the chair, my opinion is I don't think they're really going to have a strong feeling one way or the other. I think they're going to, if the desire is to keep it consistent with what the Ethics Commission does, then I think the contract would be in place. If the desire is just to have the term language, I don't know that it really matters. The only reason, again, that I added it in there was from listening to prior discussion, which wasn't really, there was just discussion about it. There wasn't a lot of detail about why there was concern even about contract versus no contract.
Yes, sir.
What,
Mr.
What do we want? That's really what matters.
Substantively, I don't know that it matters if he signs a contract or not. I think his employment, all of that is going to be what it is. I'm certainly okay with the contract.
And through the chair, I agree. I'm not sure that it substantively changes anything. At the same time, I don't really understand the history of why the ethics director has a contract. And to the point at the beginning of this conversation about being consistent, I think that's fair. Because if we're not, I would challenge why the ethics director has a contract.
Through the chair, it could be related to the ethics director is not a full-time director. He's allowed to work X amount of hours, at least the way it used to be. And I'm not sure.
It's still that way. Her contract dictates how many hours, how she gets paid for those hours. She's nowhere near full-time. Things like 20 to 25 hours a week max.
I believe the intent was for some independence to make it, not to protect the individual financially, but really to limit the city's ability financially to fire or dismiss the individual. If they have that contract and they're terminated not in accordance with the termination provisions, then there's some legal ability there for that individual to attempt to recoup his or her anticipated earnings based on the contractual terms. And that's what I believe it is in there for, is really to create that independence. My personal opinion is I believe it is done through the term provision, but again, I think it's the committee's decision on which way they want to go.
Well, and along those same lines, certainly we do want the Inspector General to have some independence. So maybe the contract language is good. If at least for those appearances that he is or he or she is independent.
I think if you want to keep the position as strong as it was planned on being, that who would terminate the contract for whatever reason? City Council?
So that's the termination provisions in here, sir. It would be the committee that would draw up the charges. There would be a hearing, and then it would ultimately go to the City Council for confirmation. Yes, sir.
It would go to the City Council for final decision.
But it would be a minimum of four members of the committee who would have to vote for termination based on allegations or charges brought against the Inspector General.
I like the contract. I think, like Ms. Broche, I like it. It's consistent with the ethics officer, notwithstanding how many hours they work. But it's a nothing else. It's a signal that it's a contract.
And it is consistent with the other municipalities as well. That's how the other three counties do it.
I agree.
I'm just curious why you took it out.
The only reason I took it out, sir, sorry, through the chair, is only because of that discussion, so that you guys could have discussion about it, because the committee had discussion about it in the past, and I just wanted them to be able to continue that discussion. I had no vested interest either way in it staying in or going out. It was purely to develop that conversation, because as I listened to the old minutes, it was a topic of discussion at least twice before the committee in the past.
I think there's consensus then. We like the contract language, so let's leave that in. So
these changes are not mine. I mean, I really tried to capture the intent of the committee going forward to try to put in here what I thought. And even the changes in the penalty provisions, those were changes that were done by Mr. Rohan prior to, they just never got enacted. He had done them in draft form before I arrived. So I just tried to encapsulate everything that had been done over the last 2 years.
All right. So just to recap, 602.301, no change. 602.302, no change. 602.303, we have the semicolons in subparagraphs B, C, D, E. There is the change making it contracts, not contacts. There's a semicolon added at the end of subparagraph FG. In H, we have the capitalization of Inspector General, another semicolon, semicolon I, J, K, L, M. Then N, the changes in red, the Inspector General Selection and Retention Committee. In that paragraph with the semicolon, semicolon added at the end of O. P, we're changing the language, taking out corruption and fraud and putting in waste, fraud, and abuse, semicolon. And then Q, the semicolon. R, taking out and post. So it reads established policies and procedures, ending semicolon. S, semicolon. T, U, W, semicolon, add the and. In X, we're capitalizing T. In 602.304, we're adding language in the last sentence, if not already certified as an Inspector General, removing unless a certification is already held. In 602.305, we're capitalizing Inspector General. Okay, we're adding all of the language there concerning the chairperson, including upon enactment of this provision, the president of the Jacksonville City Council will assume the duties of chairperson for 2 years. There's a change there in B, taking out contract.
We'll add that back in. Sorry to keep.
I'm sorry. Yes. So that.
You want to add July 1st in the paragraph ahead of it.
Yes, I'm sorry. And we're adding July so that that change occurs in July as to the chairperson, leaving in the word contract in subparagraph B. And C, leaving in the language about the contract. In D, we're going to take out the word only that was proposed. In E, we're capitalizing general. In F, we have a new paragraph there. In 602306, there's no change. 602307, we are going to add Office of Inspector General, leaving it then the last sentence, a minimum funding base is hereby established at $400,000 annually. 602308, we'll change the, correct the of to two, T-O. And then we have the language added in the penalty provision 602309 to change it a class D offense as opposed to just the fine, which there concerning that ordinance penalty provisions. Anything else? Mr. Hoffman, you've got that?
Yes, ma'am. We'll make those changes and then we'll work with the council president to get that moving forward.
All right. Do we want to, someone want to make a motion that we?
I move that we approve the changes as approved by the board and request that it be submitted to council for consideration.
Second.
All right, any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, great. That is the ordinance changes. C was selection of chairperson, but we have handled that. D, budget directive.
So, ma'am, you approved this at the last meeting. The only change we had to make is with in some discussions with our finance manager after that meeting, we had originally had it so that we would notice the meeting by April 1st and have it between April 15th and April 30th. But in further discussions, I think it's better to notice it by March 15th. And have it between April 1st and April 15th to allow us enough time to present the budget to the committee prior to submission to the mayor's budget office for them to start doing their work on it. Because I believe the forms just came out yesterday. I believe it'll be due by the end of April, if not by the end of next week, to the mayor's budget office. So having the meeting within this 2 week period gives us enough time to present it to you before presentation to the mayor's office.
Okay.
So those are the only changes we made. Other than that, it was already approved at the last committee meeting, ma'am.
So we don't need to do anything else with that. New business. We have update by the Inspector General on the Inspector General activities.
Yes, ma'am. So again, my updates will always be verbal. I prefer that as opposed to PowerPoint, but I can always switch if the committee has a different desire. Through the end of March, so we've calculated our stats through the end of March, so the first 6 months of this fiscal year, we've received 63 complaints to date. The most coming in October, where we had 15. The least were in December, which is kind of anticipated. And then we had 11 in February and 13 in March. At this pace, our office will receive about 126 complaints in this fiscal year, which will surpass 2017 by about 23 complaints. And to date, since the office was established in 2014, we've received 349 complaints total. Of the complaints so far received in fiscal year 2018, we've closed 31 of them, which is about 49% of the complaints received. And then in addition to the fiscal year 18 complaints that we have closed an additional 4 complaints from fiscal year 14, 4 from fiscal year 16, and 12 from fiscal year 17. So far this year, we've issued 2 investigative reports, 1 audit report, and 1 contract report. We have 3 more investigative reports that we're working on final draft versions of now, and we hope that we'll have those released here in the next several months Two of those investigations will be the office's most time-consuming and lengthiest investigations that we've had to date. So they've taken some time, and we hope to have some drafts out here in the next month and a half. So far in the ones we've issued, we've identified a little under $3,000 in identified or question cost, and we've made a total of 11 recommendations. As I mentioned before, the investigative reports really don't tell the entire story. In addition to that, we've issued 8 management inquiries, which require a response from whatever organization we send them to, and then 13 management referrals, where no response is required. And of the 8 management inquiries we've sent, we've made a total of 31 recommendations or questions for management for improving the efficiency or effectiveness of the consolidated government. And again, those are across the entire consolidated government. They're not unique to the mayor's office, to the core city, or to JEA. It's across the entire consolidated government. We continue the outreach efforts that we started towards the end of fiscal year 17. Early in fiscal year 18, we met with all 4 of the independent authorities in a hope to increase collaboration and cooperation with them. Those meetings all went very well. We've instituted a new protocol with JEA that is different from the one we had prior. We've also started a monthly meeting with JEA to increase collaboration with their compliance folks. And we've had 2 of those already so far in fiscal year 18. In addition to the collaboration and cooperation, we also discussed finances with the independent authorities, and we were happy to get another financial commitment from them for both fiscal year 19 and fiscal year 20. It'll be the same amount, $115,000, so it'll be $85,000 from JEA and then $10,000 from each of the other 3 independent authorities. And that agreement has been signed by the mayor's office, and then we'll go through, we'll be part of the budget that gets presented to the council in July. And then in addition to that, we've also continued our outreach with citizens. We've presented at 3 of the 6 citizen planning advisory committees, which has been great. We've done that in conjunction with the ethics office. And then we'll present at the final 3 by May. We've got 2 next week, and then we'll do the urban core the first week in May. And then we will have presented on our office to all 6 of those committees. And when we go, we give a very short spiel about our office, what we do, how we're different from code compliance and some of the other city organizations. But we also pass out our pamphlets and business cards and how to contact us. I was fortunate last month, the office was able, we were asked by Global Jacks to present to a local delegation from Armenia that came in to learn about whistleblower protections. So we gave about an hour and a half presentation to about 6 individuals from Armenia, from their Justice Department and the judiciary, which was very interesting and had great dialogue. I would say it was about a 30-minute presentation with about an hour of questions from them. Unfortunately, it's all not good news. We lost 2 of our longest-serving employees in February and March. Our auditor left us in February for a new position, and our contract oversight individual left us in March to relocate out of state. But through the help of the Employee Services Department, we were able to quickly advertise those positions, and I'm happy that we'll have a new contract oversight specialist starting next Monday and a new auditor starting on the 16th of April. So we'll be back up to a full office, which is good because when the office was stood up, we took over the Sunshine Compliance audit from the Council Auditor's Office, and it's coming up on our 2-year cycle, so we need to have that done by July. And then finally, we continue our push for accreditation by the Commission for Florida Law Enforcement Accreditation. The Deputy IG has been working hard to get trained as an assessor by the Commission. That's going to help our office out. She will go to other OIGs in Florida who are being accredited to assess them, and I think that'll give us better insight to the process and to help us prepare for our own accreditation. And then she's also been working very, very hard and updating all of our policies and procedures. So there's about 49 accreditation standards, I believe. 42 accreditation standards, and our policies and procedures have to match those 42 accreditation standards, which, to make it helpful, they change fairly regularly. So we're going through and updating all of our policies and procedures to match those accreditation standards. Oh, and then we also issued our annual report in December of this year and presented to the council in December as well. That's all I have for the update. Any questions?
How many old cases do you still have left open?
So we still have, I don't have the exact number. I can add it up here.
Ballpark, I mean.
So we have 28 from fiscal year 15, 13 from fiscal year 16, and 22 from fiscal year 17. But of the 2 investigations that I discussed, they're both from fiscal year 15, the lengthiest. And so when those get issued, and this 28 remaining open is, it's more than one complaint on one issue. So one of those investigations will close. I think it's about 10 or 11, 13 of those With that one investigation, we'll close 13 of those from fiscal year 15.
How do you feel like you're doing on manpower? Obviously, it's you've lost two people, so.
So losing two people for the size of our office certainly hurts, but I think where we're at right now with the numbers that we're processing, we're in a good place. When I get to the budget, we'll talk about our executive assistant, which is the only thing that we'll ask for as an enhancement in this year's budget. But other than that, I think, you know, you can obviously do more with more people, but I think where you're at, sometimes you get more people, you just get more bureaucracy. And I think the size that we're at, we're a good lean office. We've got a lot of great employees who work really, really hard. And I think it's a good fit right now. I think we'll have to continue to see how our numbers grow. If, I mean, right now, my assessment of the outreach efforts is it's a fixed universe. We're not really, unfortunately, I was hoping by more outreach to the CPACs and some of that stuff, we might grow more. But we seem, you know, we grow incrementally, but not enough for me to say, hey, there's this huge jump in complaints coming in at this point, ma'am.
Good. Anything else? Any additional questions, discussion on that? All right.
One. And no questions through the chair. Would just say that I think it would be helpful. I don't need a PowerPoint, but to maybe have like some bullet points of some of the things that you went over. And you don't need to do it for this time for me, but going forward, I think it would be helpful to just have some of the information that you're sharing with us.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Yes, sir, Mr.
Yeah, so currently we have 8 full-time employees and 1 part-time employee. So the 8 full-time employees, 1 inspector general, 1 deputy inspector general. We have a finance and intake unit manager, Ms. Tina Slosky, back here. We have 3 investigators, Mr. Duran Nins. He's our newest investigator. He came on in the spring of 2017. And then we have 2 other investigators in addition to him. And then we have an auditor and a contract oversight specialist. And then in addition, we have Emily Edge, who is our part-time executive assistant. So a staff of 9 total, 8 full-time equivalents, and then 1 part-time employee. That's our organization chart from the annual report.
Through the chair.
Yes, sir.
I think it's important to note that even when the IG's office simply sends a management referral to us, we do investigate and we do reply. Even though reply is not required, we want to keep them in the loop as to what action we took on that management referral.
And a lot of times a management referral, it may be an employee issue. It may just be somebody who, it doesn't look like it's a systemic issue, but somebody got mad at their supervisor. We'll forward that to the administration to handle as a kind of an operation personnel issue. Sometimes a management referral may be a referral to another agency who's better equipped to handle the issue that we have.
All right, thank you. Anything else on that? Okay, then let's move to the budget for the fiscal year 2019.
So you'll see from our budget, the costs that are controllable within our organization, and obviously the salary costs are somewhat controllable by us based on the number of people, but really the costs that are controllable by us are kind of down here at the bottom under other operating expenditures. And one thing that the deputy IG really tried hard to do in conjunction with the other staff, because we've had 2 or 3 years of kind of stable manning now, more data to support, they really took a hard look at our other operating expenditures to figure out where we could try and cut some money from that number this year. And I'm happy to report that in fiscal year 18, we had 42,148, and through the work of the deputy IG and the rest of the staff, we were able to reduce that to $37,362, which is going to be our ask in fiscal year 19. So it's about 11% reduction in those things that we can control in-house. And some of that is things like local miles. We reduced by $1,250 because we just realized we weren't using it. And now we have 2 or 3 years of data of using it so that we have a better idea. The 2 biggest costs within that other operating expenditures is really our travel for training and then our training budget, which is about $23,000, and that's because our 4 investigators, so the deputy IG is also an investigator, our 4 investigators have 20 hours of continuing professional education every year, and then our auditor has 40 hours of continuing professional education every year. So we have a fairly heavy continuing professional education lift there. And then you'll see we gave you 2 forms here. The second form, where it shows the proposed salaries at $683,366, that's if we stay where we are this year. So that's with no enhancement request, and we stay with 8 full-time employees. And you can see there's an increase of $12,927, or a 2% change, which is good because there should be an automatic 4.5% jump in there because of the pension reform agreement. But what we did with our two new employees, our older employees were at a higher rate. Our two new employees we hired at $60,000 each, which is about an $8,250 reduction in salaries from the two previous employees. But what we intend to propose is the first page, which is the $699,042, which is the addition of the full-time executive assistant. And the reason we feel that executive assistant is important is because with a small office, it is important to me to have, and to the entire staff, to have the investigators investigating, to have them doing interviews, gathering data, collecting evidence. And our executive assistant really is the one who's reviewing the reports, coming up with the draft reports. If there's going to be a data or a schematic or a diagram in a report, she's usually the one that's drafting that. She's instrumental to our annual report. She's instrumental to all of the presentations we give for outreach. She developed our pamphlet. The display that we have at the tax collector's office was done by her. So there's just a lot of work that she does that is beyond kind of what a normal executive assistant does because of the size of our office. And we think having her around full-time will really add to our ability for our investigators to get out there and spend more time actually collecting evidence and investigating as opposed to working on reports and doing some more of the administrative stuff. And then she also has become helpful in reviewing, as an investigative analyst, and reviewing some evidence that we bring in. If we get a large amount of data, she helps us sift through it and things of that nature. So in the difference is, and I would like to add quickly, when you look at the pension cost and the employer-provided benefits, you'll see the numbers are the same. We don't control those numbers, so what we did is we just carried last year's numbers through to this year to give you an idea. I don't know what those numbers will be for fiscal year 19 because it's the budget office that inputs those once we give them our budget. So, but I wanted you to have an idea of what they were last year, so we carried those numbers forward. So the total difference in our budget by adding the full-time executive assistant, we have $26,001 in part-time hours that we would give up. Based on conversations with employee services, the salary would be $41,001. I'm not sure why there's a dollar in there, but there is. And so it would be a change in our budget from about $28,000, and that includes the increase in salary, and then based on the numbers that the budget office ran last year, about $12,200 in benefits. I don't know if that number will change this year. My guess is it wouldn't change substantially, but that was the number that they developed last year when we had this request.
I'm sure I should know this, but what are internal service charges?
So internal service charges are the things that we pay the Yates building. We pay a charge to the city, almost a rent. For ITD, we pay an internal service charge. We pay an internal service charge to the Office of General Counsel.
I'm not sure if I'm missing. I think those are the
bulk of the internal service charges.
Printing and copying.
Some of our software programs, so LexisNexis, ITD, pick that up. We used to pay for that out of our budget, and ITD now pays for that out of their budget. But it gets billed back to us as an internal service charge. But I think it's just for consistency so the city has more control over their total IT cost as opposed to having 18 organizations buying software and programs and things of that nature.
That's exactly correct.
But again, those are things that we don't, I mean, I guess we kind of control them based on our usage, but it's really driven by the size of our organization.
Right. Any discussion of any of those numbers and feelings on the executive assistant, full-time, part-time? I would think we should come down one way or the other.
Also, in terms of the proposed increase with the projected increase in filings, I think it sounds reasonable to me.
The chair, I agree as well.
I'm indifferent.
I have a question. Will it become a full-time position?
Yes, ma'am. So we would give up the part-time hours that we currently have. We would give up both the dollars and the hours that we currently have, by understanding. I'm not sure why it matters, but people keep telling me you have to say you'll give up the dollars and the hours. So we would give up both the dollars and the hours, and then we would change from 8 full-time employees to 9. But the change in full-time employees requires council approval to increase.
I think it'll be helpful to the office. I mean, I think that's one of those positions that you get a lot for your money. Is there a consensus?
I support it, though we've had discussions with the Inspector General and the Deputy IG. And with Ms. Green staring me down right now, I'm afraid to say anything otherwise.
Are there any thoughts about how now? I mean, we obviously, well, you know, we have the council president here, but is there some way that this committee should convey that to the council?
And, do we?
Yeah, Mr. Musa?
If I may, please. I will take the lead in supporting this request to the Mayor's Budget Review Committee, and I will support it in front of the committee. I've got 4 of the members that I've got to convince, but I think if I take the lead on it, I think they'll help support me, support them. And I'm sure Ms. Brochet, in whatever capacity she's in next budget year, will also support it.
Yes. And I guess you can convey that the committee,
absolutely.
Obviously.
I'm going to blame it on y'all, not me.
All
yes,
right.
Ma'am, I'd be happy to convey it.
Move we approve the proposed budget for the Inspector General.
Second. And that will be at the main difference is this number, salary number of $699,042.
With the enhancement. Correct, yes, sir. And again, there most likely will be some additional changes to the benefit cost and the internal service charges.
Sure.
We just don't know what those are yet.
All right. Any additional discussion on that? All in favor then of supporting the $699.42? Any opposed? All right. Then that is approved. Mr. Moose is going to take the lead. Supporting that. I think that is everything. Anything else so far as new business? Anyone have anything? Yeah, we do need to do public comment. I do not see anybody.
If I may just a word when you're done.
Yes, Mr. Musa, go ahead.
Let me emphasize Ms. Brochet's point. It would be extremely helpful if you could have a written Inspector General report, a one-pager, or a copy of the notes that you're reading from.
Yes, sir.
That would help Mr. Musa make his case to his
It would help.
Good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yes,
that gives him something hard to take with him.
Yeah, we keep in the file.
And we'll make sure we do that. And my apologies for not having it ready this time.
Anything else before we adjourn?
Ma'am, you had mentioned the performance standards you were going to take up as new business.
That's right. Thank you very much. I think, would typically meet again around November. Do we want to try to discuss that evaluation then, the performance evaluation? Do y'all want to set up a separate time for us to meet to do that?
If I may, when's your first year?
June 1st, sir. Yes, sir.
I mean, we can set up, I guess, a separate meeting to discuss just that.
Can we distribute those in advance?
All right. Mr. Hoffman, if you could get those to us, at least 30 days out, I guess, from the beginning of June, do y'all want to try to pick a meeting now? Does everyone have a calendar? What about June 7th, the afternoon of June 7th?
Can we talk again?
1 o'clock? Okay, you know what, let me, I think actually that would be a very bad
I'll
time.
Be with, I believe Mr. Musa looks like.
No, June 7th wouldn't
yeah.
work for me.
Okay.
Budget review.
Yeah.
Okay. June 21st in the afternoon, the 20th or 21st?
We actually have our budget review on the 21st.
Extremely
okay.
For me.
About the in May, in May the.
Yeah, maybe the end of May.
May the 31st.
I'm good.
If everybody can do May 31st, I'll see
Uh-oh.
What I can do.
I cannot.
That's trouble for you.
I at least. No, you can't.
No, I can't.
Okay. The 29th. In the afternoon?
Not for me.
No, no.
Good morning. 29th.
Maybe this is bad. Maybe I shouldn't throw this out. But what about a Friday morning?
The 1st.
The 1st?
June 1st?
June 1st in the morning?
I have an MBRC.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
All morning?
I can, listen, if it's my calendar, I can forego the meeting. I don't want to delay this. If it's my calendar that's going to control, I have plenty of trust and confidence in the remaining committee members.
Y'all want to try to set that, like at 9:30 Friday morning, June 1st? Okay. And I guess we could get maybe just this room again to, and if Mr. Hoffman will get, actually, I guess as soon as you can, maybe those.
We'll send it out this afternoon.
Evaluation. And it, that way it won't, I don't think it'll take us long, but we can get that done.
I have a 1 hour MBRC that morning that begins. 9? When'd you all schedule the meeting?
I said 9:30,
that's
but...
That's fine.
We could do...
If I get done early, I'll just join y'all subsequently. You can leave it at 9:30.
We could bump it up to 10.
I wouldn't do that if everybody's good at 9:30.
I'm good. Either one.
Well, we'll do 10, so we can...
10's fine by
we'll,
me.
We'll, okay. We'll move it to 10 and... Maybe that Mr. Musa can join us. IG. All right. And it certainly won't need to be a long meeting. So.
Thank you much for that.
Anything else? All right. We are adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you for your time.